Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, The Darkest Cases, a conversation with Jimmy Pennanito. Jimmy Pennanito has been on the paranormal investigation scene longer than most. Originally part of the investigative team put together by Ed and Lorraine Warren, Jimmy has walked through the doors of some of America's most infamous haunts and has seen firsthand the true power of the paranormal. Throughout his career, Jimmy has been a part of more than 50 exorcisms, including prolific exorcisms performed by Father Malachi Martin. Today, we talk about the life that Jimmy has found himself in and the dark cases he's investigated over his career.
Ever since I was a kid, I was interested in the paranormal, supernatural, whatever we called it back then. I would watch back when I was a kid, they only had shows like In Search Of, Unsolved Mysteries, that sort of thing. Yep. And I would watch any show I could on that subject matter. As a kid, I collected all, you know, any kind of ghost books or ghost photography books, UFO books. I couldn't get enough of that stuff. And one particular episode of In Search Of, Hans Holzer was the main speaker in it. And he was saying that you could communicate with spirits anywhere. It doesn't have to be in a haunted location. You could find them in your own house. So I was like 6 years old or something. And he goes, you know, you could find them in your basement. So I immediately asked my mom, we got a flashlight? She's like, yeah. And I remember the one I got. It had a little red light on it. I was all excited. And I went down the basement. And she goes, what are you doing? I said, I'll go look for ghosts in the basement. And I was so aggravated, I didn't find any. But I was always interested since I was a little kid.
Sure.
And I had one incident. I was about 9 or 10 years old. It seems like the age where most people have an experience. My mother was having company over in the kitchen, and it was about 7 o'clock at night. And she said, Jimmy, stay up in your room. You know, I'm having company. Don't bother us, basically. Sure. Stay up in your room. So I went up in my room. I remember I was laying on my stomach on the bed with my knees bent in the air, my feet dangling over my back, kind of. And I was listening to a baseball game on the radio, and it was the old radios with the two dials, one for volume, one for tuning. And all of a sudden, the radio started changing stations. And even as a young kid, I thought, oh, it must be some kind of weird defect or frequency. I don't know. I said, I didn't jump to ghost, you know. So I look over at the radio, and I could actually see the tuning knob, which was huge, like, you know, three, it was a big knob, turning back and forth. So then I started freaking out, and then something slammed my legs that were over my back down onto the bed really, really hard. And I ran downstairs like my mother told me not to. I said, Ma, there's a ghost in my room. I was changing my radio stations. I threw my legs down on the bed. There's a ghost in my room. And she said, Jimmy, get back up in your bed. There's no such thing as ghosts. And I said, I think now I'm still trying to prove her wrong, Tony.
Yeah. It was an experience that was very compelling. I mean, you're seeing things being manipulated that otherwise could not turn on their own. And I think we should preface that for anyone who, you know, was not alive in the days of Unsolved Mysteries and everything's been digital for them. It's, you know, that you didn't, there was no digital component. There was no way, there was nothing that would make this happen on its own. There's no explanation for something like that when it's physically being manipulated. And then you had that physical interaction, that physical feeling as well. That would lead one to believe, yes, there's something going on here in that house. Was that your only experience in that house, or did other experiences continue to progress throughout your childhood?
Well, that's the weird thing. I wouldn't consider that I lived in a haunted house. That was just the only incident that ever happened in that house.
Wow.
And but it kind of piqued my curiosity even more. When I got a little older, I remember I got a book, I think it was called Real Ghosts, by Daniel Cohen. I don't know how I remember that. But there was a picture of the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall in it.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that picture, lady on top of the staircase.
Very famous.
And they called it a spirit photography. And I said, I want to get a picture like that one day. I still haven't got a picture. Like, I still haven't gotten a picture that good. But I started before the internet. I couldn't really find, you know, haunted locations to go to. I didn't know where they were.
Sure.
So I would just go to local cemeteries, taking pictures, trying to get stuff. And finally, a friend of mine told me how to get to Union Cemetery in Easton, Connecticut, home of the White Lady, who I've heard of that story. So it's a woman in white that supposedly walks through the cemetery. And I was under understanding that you could just go to the cemetery and take her picture. Mm-hmm. Like, she's walking around, you just get her picture. So I went there one night with a roll of film, and I waited 2 hours. I didn't see the White Lady. So I said, I'm just going to, you know, take my roll of film and go home. And that could have been the end of my little ghost hunting career. But then when I got home, I got them developed, and I got some weird, not a little orb or something. I got some really solid looking stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was curious. That's kind of weird. So I went back over and over and over again. And I had I made a photo album of all the pictures I got. And I would go up there, and once in a while you see another person taking pictures up there, and you start talking with them. So I met a girl named Debbie up there who I was trying to show people my book. Like, look at me. And she was looking through them. She goes, oh, the Warrens would love to see these pictures. She goes, she's a member of their group, Ed and Lorraine Warren. Mm-hmm. So she says, they have meetings on Monday night. She goes, why don't you come next Monday night and show them your pictures? So the next Monday night I went, and I didn't know of them because they came to my college probably a year before or so, and I was familiar with them. And I remember going up there, and I said, I got to make sure, because these pictures are so good that they're going to want to steal them and take them for their own. And then when I got up there, I showed Lorraine the pictures. She goes, can we have these? I was like, sure, take them. And since then, I started working with the group.
And when you started having those interactions, we should paint the picture here too. This is pre-television shows about ghosts on any sort of mass scale. Exactly what you said. There was unsolved mysteries and the handful that existed, but they were few and far between. And there wasn't the culture that there is today in terms of people being interested in the paranormal or as openly discussed. I mean, it had to have been, you're kind of putting yourself out on a limb there, going around with your book of
yeah.
pictures that you found without everybody going, well, there's the crazy kid that's got
that's the way it was back then. When we investigate a home, mm-hmm. Suppose we're coming back at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and it was kind of a tradition that we go to this diner close to their house after a case and get something to eat.
Yeah.
And they were locally famous then. Sure. It wasn't like Conjuring famous now, but people knew who they were. And I remember we'd be sitting there, like a group of us, and there would people be whispering and pointing and kind of like making fun, like those are those weirdos that do that stuff. And I said, nowadays people would be begging for their autographs.
Yeah, exactly. It was a completely different dynamic. I'm friends with Chris McKinnell, and he's been on our show several times. I help him with a lot of he's getting his own podcast going and his website. So I've been helping him put all that up in the air. And obviously just the investigations, the stories and all that at that time, different place and time. So how did that work? How was that for you when you connected with the Warrens and you began getting involved with the group and going out on investigations? How did that progress over time? What was the process of going out on a ghost investigation with the Warrens at that point in time?
Right. Well, in the beginning, we mostly have a class, and like I said, it was all Monday nights. And one of the first things we do is review. They'd get numerous messages on their answering machine every week of people wanting their house investigated. Mm-hmm. And they'd play all the messages for us. So, we get this one in New York, this one in New Jersey, this one in Connecticut. And we pick through them to see which ones were needed the help first, maybe with a child or something violent. And that's why a lot of people kind of question the Warrens' cases. Like, how come all their cases are crazy, demonic, or, because they were the only people doing this at the time.
Sure.
And they were picking the worst of the worst. They're not picking, I heard three knocks on my door and that's it. They're not going there. They're going to the house with somebody getting slashed every day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So most classes were, they used to be instructional, like how to like conduct an investigation or how to what questions to ask a client, what cases came in or the week, what they're working on now. And then even sometimes, you know, we'd have a 2-hour class and then visit 3 homes after the class. So we'd go, you know, travel over the state, just getting the initial interview from people. And we usually go in a group. So it was never, it wasn't for a while. So they'll send you out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first time I went up there, I went with my friend Rick Clark, who we kind of created a team. Anytime they'd have a case, that they'd send us on together. So the first case we ever, they set us on just by ourselves, was a house in Waterbury, Connecticut. And Lorraine called us up. It was, I don't know, 9-10 o'clock at night. And she says, hey, do you guys want to go to a house in Waterbury, Connecticut? The woman is sitting on her front steps crying, and she will not go back in the house till somebody gets there. So that's like your dream come true. I mean, you don't want the person to be crying, but it was exciting. It's sure. Like, yeah, we're going on our first case together alone. And the woman, we went, and the woman was crying on her front steps when we got there.
What's going through your mind as you're about to enter into this, your first case? Obviously, you know, the acceptance that this stuff happens, I'm sure, is there. But then to experience it firsthand, or what you're walking into after hearing and seeing the stories that Ed and Lorraine have been preparing you for, what do you think you're about to walk into?
Well, you know, what's funny is we didn't know we were walking into. She literally didn't give us too much. It was so long ago, she might have told us something. But we didn't know any much details about the case, except that the woman's crying and won't go inside her house.
Mm-hmm.
So we got up there, and our the first thing we want to do is interview the woman. And she was very young. She was maybe 22 years old, and she had a 3-year-old son. She had a boyfriend that worked nights, and they were the only people that lived in the it was a second-floor apartment. And so we set up, back then we only had a video camera, a still camera, and an old EMF meter. Like that was I was a tech expert for having that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, that's all we had. So we set up in the living room, and we wanted to get her story first. So we could, our job back then was more to observe and report. It was kind of nice because there was no pressure on us. It was to get the story and then give it to the Warrens to see what they want to do with it. So I remember the woman was telling us that, that she's been bothered by a shadow figure. Her 3-year-old son's been scratched and beaten by some little, the boy says it's a little boy that does it named Bobby. And she said one time she went to the boy's bedroom, and every toy that was in his toy box and in his closet was piled on top of him. Like just something impossible to, he couldn't do it himself.
Sure.
He had these little blinking sneakers. You know those little sneakers that light up?
Sure, yeah.
He had those, and there's a funny story about those. The woman's mother would come visit her a lot because she used to be terrified, and the boyfriend was out working at night, so she'd come visit a lot. And the mother told us that the pair of sneakers, they're sitting on the little boy's room. She goes, "Those sneakers right there." She goes, "They mock me." And I said, "What are you talking about? They mock you?" She goes, "Well, I'll walk by, and they'll blink at me." I said, "Well, maybe it's the vibration of the ground or something, or the battery. I don't know how they work. You know, the batteries are going."
Sure.
And she goes, "No." She goes, "I've actually seen them walk across the room. Sneakers." Maybe we'll come back to that part later, but
yeah,
that's important. So, what else? She sees, and while we're talking to her, she's terrified. She'd point to a certain corner of the room and says, "Don't you see it right there?" I was like, "See what?" She goes, "There's a shadow man right there." And it's like, "We don't see it." Mm-hmm. Me or Rick don't see it. So we're a half hour into this. I said, maybe she's just imagining things.
Yeah.
We're not seeing anything. And I'm literally ready to pack up my stuff. And then she says, she goes, "Oh, it just went into the bedroom." So I really don't believe her at this point. I mean, I'm older now and more experienced. I'd probably, you know, stick with it more. But back then, I was like, we're not seeing anything.
Sure.
So she goes, "Okay, it went into the bedroom." So me and Rick and her, we go into the bedroom, and she goes, "There it is. Don't you see it right there?" And like, me and Rick are looking at each other like, "Do you see that?" And he's like, "Yeah."
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's 2 brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. to hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.